Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me today. It's my pleasure as we continue to talk about topics that are very important to you and me and our small businesses, not only yours, but mine too. You know, I'm learning things here every day myself. I'm running a small business just like you are. And that's one of the reasons why I like introducing you to all these really smart people who are members of our Brain Trust, the old ones and the new ones. And I say old, you know, that's just for the guys. The ladies are, you know, the ones who've been there. They're the ones who've just been with us for a while. Barry Stein is a new member of our Brain Trust, and he's an intellectual property attorney. He's a member of the Association of Patent Law Firms. His firm is, I should say. And I'm going to say his law firm, folks, here, and I want you to make a note here because this will be on the test later. The firm is called Caesar Ravise Bernstein Cohen and Picatello. I think is how you pronounce it. I'm not sure. But we'll see how I did on that in just a minute. Barry Stein, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim. Hello to all your listeners.
How did I do on the name there?
Well, I think the last one is Pocatillo.
Pocatillo, okay. Well, there was no accent marks there, but please forgive my... Give my apologies to Mr. or Ms. Pocatillo. But anyway, it's good to have you here. And my audience knows about intellectual property because they've heard me talking about it. They know that I've been on my soapbox about intellectual property for over 10 years now, Barry, talking to my audience about the importance of, well, first, about recognizing that everybody out there is creating some level of intellectual property. Now, can it be patented? Can it be trademarked? Can it be secured? Can it be leveraged? Can it be commercialized? That's another story. But every day we're doing something that could lead to something that needs to be protected and something that we can leverage as a tool. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I've been representing individual inventors, small companies, and up to multi-billion-dollar companies for almost 40 years now. And what you said is absolutely true. Most people don't recognize some of the things they developed can be protected either by a patent, a trademark, or a copyright. I think perhaps let's focus in on what's the best way to commercialize your invention if you have one. Now, mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about inventions, and so therefore it's probably going to be related more likely to patents, but clearly an invention could be in software, so it could be protected also by a copyright
right.
or a trade secret. But typically, firms, businesses, small entities come up with an idea of how to do something, whether it's a product or a process. And the first fundamental question is, how are you going to commercialize that? And a lot of that, the answer depends on what that new product process is. I look at things, if it's a revolutionary product, that seems to be, you know, a sharp line of demarcation versus an evolutionary product. A revolutionary product, virtually the first one. Now, if you have something like that, then my advice typically to my clients is to file an application for a patent as early as possible. The reason is you want to make sure you get your foot in the door to get that idea protected. And I say do that even before you've engineered it, because the engineering mm-hmm. and the development may take many years.
Right.
One of my clients, a doc and an engineer, got together. They had a little idea on a product. We filed a patent application on it and got very broad coverage. Then they went out and recognized that this product themselves, they couldn't engineer it or market it. They didn't have the infrastructure built
right.
up. So they've looked around, found a licensee, a potential licensee. The licensee looked at the scope of coverage of this broad patent we got and said, wow, we can take this and carry it on. And well, the rest is history.
Well, one of the things that's one of the big things, Barry, that if getting a patent, finding someone like you, and not that it's a piece of cake, but it's not, that's not the hard part. I think the big decision for inventors is who's going to take this to market. And I've talked to them over the years, many of them who they don't realize that they're inventors. They think they're manufacturers and marketers. And they come to me and they say, I've got this great invention, help me take it to market. And that's when I say, okay, tell me about your manufacturing plant. And they say, well, I don't have one of those. Tell me about your channels, your multiple channels out into the global marketplace. Tell me about how you're going to do that. Oh, I don't have any of those. And I say, well, you know, why would you want to create those when somebody else already has them? You've got the invention. Why don't you let somebody else do it?
Well, I think you're 100% right. And as I said, in all my years of experience, I think the most singular cause of failure is that people don't have the wherewithal to commercialize. The infrastructure is not there. My advice for most people, if they're not in a business like what the product or process is going to be, to find someone else that can carry the ball for them. Some clients create what I call, what they call virtual companies. They may have a brain trust of maybe the inventor and a marketing or sales guy, and then they go out and they engage consultants to actually engineer and develop the product and possibly commercialize it for them.
One of the big things there, Barry, one of the big concerns that always comes up is, how do I protect myself while I'm revealing to other people what I have?
Well, certainly, clearly one thing you want to have, any person that you're going to be discussing any confidential information with, you're going to want to have a confidentiality agreement. Sometimes we refer to these as non-disclosure agreements or NDAs. Mm-hmm. And these can run all over the place. I mean, I've seen some people say, I have an NDA with somebody, and in fact, it's the exact opposite. The agreement that they signed said that the person to whom they're disclosing it is not taking it in confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to be careful. It's dangerous to use forms and things like that. But for the most part, if you have a well-drafted and crafted non-disclosure agreement, that will at least give you some measure of protection.
At least something you can defend if you should have to go to court on it. Stand by. We've got to take a quick break. We're right back with Barry Stein. We're going to talk some more about intellectual property, your intellectual property, right after these messages. 20 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us.
Jim, this is Jerry Detweiler from BusinessCreditSuccess.com. Congratulations on your 10th anniversary. What an accomplishment. And I am looking forward to 10, 20, who knows how many more years. Congratulations and keep up the great work.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. And my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz. Check them out. Use them to your advantage. Both of them have different things that you can use to help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. And we built them for you, so check them out. No barrier to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you come in and hang out with us and use our stuff. Barry Stein is our guest. He's a partner. I'm going to try this again, folks. A partner in the law firm of Cesar, Reviz, Bernstein, Cohen, and Pocatillo. I think I got that one right. What about the second name there? Did I get that right, Barry?
Actually, it's Rivas, R-I-V-I-Z, although
Rivas.
Spelled like revised.
No way I could have known that. And is that Caesar or Cesar? What is that?
Caesar.
Okay, Caesar, Rivas, Bernstein, Cohen, and Pocatillo. Say that three times real fast. I saw a cartoon once, Barry, where the caption was this receptionist said, I'm sorry, you have the wrong Caesar, Rivas, Bernstein, Cohen, and Pocatillo. That's a true story. It was pretty funny. Hey, give us the website. That's not going to put the whole name of the firm, right, in the website?
No, it's www.crbcp.com.
All right, CRBCP, just the acronym for all those names, folks.
You got it. First, First letter for each name.
CRBCP.com.
That's correct.
And so now this is not your grandfather's intellectual property website, is it, Barry?
Well, actually, the firm's been in practice 80 years. I've been here 40. Abe Caesar and Charlie Rivas founded the firm. Well, actually, it's over 80 years. It's probably about 83 now.
Yeah, yeah. So now, do you practice anything besides intellectual property at the firm?
Well, basically that is it. We do some internet and information technology law, but it's a small amount. But it's primarily, I should virtually say exclusively, an intellectual property law firm.
Kenneth Crozen, a man that I mentioned to you earlier, another intellectual property attorney, did some research once, and he determined that in the 70s, more companies, firms leveraged physical property at a rate of about 80% to 20% intellectual property. And by the end of the 1990s, he determined that that number had inverted. And when I read that report in the late 90s, Barry, that's when I started saying, you know what? I don't think small business owners are using 80% intellectual property, 20% physical assets, but I believe that they're moving in that direction. It may be 50-50, it may be, you know, 40-60, or even 30-70, but the point is they're moving more in that direction. And that's when I started telling my audience, guys, you've got to start recognizing that more and more of your levers in the marketplace are going to be intellectual and less of them are going to be physical.
I think you're 100% right. There's a book that I recommend. I have nothing to do with it. I get no proceeds. I wasn't for it. But I think it's a wonderful book. It's called Rembrandt's in the Attic. Have you ever heard of this?
Yes, I have. I have.
Because so many companies don't recognize they have intellectual property that they just haven't commercialized or even recognize it exists. I strongly recommend to companies that they create IP committees that periodically look through the various things that they would have never thought they'd look through before to see if there are gems to be mined. And surprisingly, there are. And then you also want to create a corporate culture in your business where you're going to encourage people to make ideas. There is no such thing, in my view, as a harebrained idea.
Right.
Some of my clients, the most successful clients, people might have laughed at the ideas that they came up with. But you throw these ideas around, there's a synergistic effect, and all of a sudden, lo and behold, you have something.
Well, and another thing is making sure that you recognize, once you start recognizing that you are an intellectual property machine, you're manufacturing these things, whether they be teeny tiny little ideas or maybe a breakthrough idea, you've got to start protecting those first with your employees. You've got to control those so they don't get away through your employees who leave you. And then through your competitors and through other means, you got to protect these things. Let me ask you, Barry, would it be a normal or a reasonable request of a company to ask to hire someone like you, for example, an intellectual property attorney, to come to their business and maybe spend a half a day and just ask questions and say, okay, if I were you, I'd protect that. If I were you, I'd protect that. Just sort of do a little bit of an inventory of possible intellectual property opportunities. What do you think?
Oh, I think that's an excellent idea. In fact, whenever we get a new client in the firm, one of the first thing we recommend is that we do that so we can, number one, teach the staff there what to be looking for. Talk to upper management to make sure that they have the appropriate agreements in place to make sure that inventions developed by the employees are owned by the employees. Inventions developed by consultants will be owned by the company. So to make sure that they have all their ducks in a row, clearly want it. Education is a number one in the area of intellectual property.
And folks, if you spend lots of money protecting your physical assets, invest a little money in protecting your intellectual property with a firm, with somebody like Barry Stein, somebody in your area who's an intellectual property attorney. Barry, thank you for being here. Good job today. Will you come back another day?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime you'd want. It was a lot of fun.
We've enjoyed having you here. Barry Stein, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. I'm not going to say the firm name again. I'll save that to next time. I don't have time now. 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.